Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. For nearly three decades, tonight's guest has ministered to and been ministered by some of Toronto's most vulnerable. Tim Huff has written about his experiences working with the homeless and marginalized in three books, the latest of which is the recently released The Yuletide Factor, and he's on the phone with us tonight to talk about it. But before we begin our conversation with Tim, let's listen to Keening for the Dawn, the title track from Steve Bell's Keening for the Dawn CD. Now to our interview with Tim Huff. Good evening, Tim.
Hey, it's great to be here, Robert. Thank
yeah.
you.
Well, I guess I want to give our listeners a little bit of an idea of who you are and what you've been doing and your background. And you write about being raised in what most of us would probably describe as a middle-class suburban Christian household. How did that lead to you getting involved with street-involved people, with the marginalized and the homeless in downtown Toronto?
Yeah, I was raised in the West End of Toronto, and my dad was a blue-collar worker, 30-plus years at the Havilland Aircraft. Mom was a church secretary, and me and my brothers were taken to Sunday school every week and all that kind of stuff. So we weren't super well off, but we were okay, and, hardworking family type of stuff. That was the environment. A strange thing happened when I was younger. I kind of fell heavily in love with rock and roll music, which was a bit foreign to my family. My older brothers hadn't been. Anyway, long and short is, at that time, the Christian hard rock and heavy metal scene had become, early 80s, pretty big. I started playing in a band with some guys. We wanted to do stuff that was different. We started playing in prisons and in youth prisons and a lot of drop-in center type of rock coffee houses that were showing up in church basements. Eventually, I just fell in love with a lot of young people who had broken lives or needed second chances or things like that. So that was kind of where it started, that the ministry really started through the type of music we're doing and the places we were doing it.
So where did that, how did that kind of lead to you actually making, almost a career out of this? Because you've been doing this now for close to 30 years.
Yeah, well, my career path actually included when I was 16 years old, I started working at a camp for deaf children. And so I was going down that path to work with what was then called Deaf Plus. Back then, it meant you had other developmental disabilities, physical and intellectual, mental, as well as being deaf. So I thought that was a career path. I thought music was a career path. I thought art was a career path. I was taking the animation course at Sheridan. So I was looking at all three and kind of God led with not so much the music piece, but who the music was speaking to. And The truth is, when I was 17 years old, we started playing at Yonge Street Mission's Evergreen, downtown Toronto on Yonge Street. And that would have been the first time I was in front of not just harder-edged kids and adults, but actually a homeless population. And so my history with Yonge Street Mission, even though I've never worked for them, so close with Rick, Tobias, and all the rest there so many years, I really was impacted by the opportunities that were there to be close up. And just over time, I approached Youth Unlimited, which was Youth for Christ in Toronto. That was the title at the time. They were doing more high school type of ministry types of things, and I said, I try something a little more streetsy and started a drop-in center. That's how I kind of entered into it career-wise or ministry career-wise.
Well, out of all of this, a few years ago, you started writing books telling your story and telling the story of some of these people. You've got Bent Hope and Dancing with Dynamite. What led to you actually taking a look at the people that you've met, the experiences that you've had, and putting them on paper so people could actually experience it themselves?
Well, part of it came from, at Youth Unlimited, we're kind of what used to be called domestic missionaries, meaning we raise our own faith support. And so you were always writing letters and stories about the young people you are working with or trying to care for or be among. I don't mean just to raise funds, but of course you were communicating with supporters, but for prayer supporters and encouragers and volunteers and things like that. And back then, we weren't using the internet. I'm talking about the 80s and early 90s. And so you would write letters quite often, perhaps six a year. And so you were telling these stories. And I just was always reading other people's ministry letters, and I could tell the ones that I was like, wow, they're not just telling me details of someone's world. They're actually getting into, what does this mean for me? What does this mean for the person receiving this letter? How should this impact my life? Not just by way of giving, but by way of how I look at things or how I take things in, my perspective, my skew on things. So it kind of started there, a little bit organic, by having to do it as part of keeping afloat in ministry-wise. Then it started to evolve, and people started to keep different collections of my stories and talk to me about them. So I just started to get deeper and deeper into the idea that I was going through all these emotions and spiritual development from the least of these, as we might say, and just came to the idea that perhaps I would try to share those, and then found a great publisher, Catholic eBooks, that believed in the stories and believed in the purpose and took me on board.
Well, did you ever really consider yourself a writer as you were going along in that, or this was just part of what you were doing to get the story out and let people know what was happening on the streets?
I could not have seen writing books as part of a career path, but by any stretch of the imagination. I guess the closest I got to it was between the ages of 18 and 30, I had written just countless songs. Not all heavy stuff, a lot of heavy stuff, but even more ballads and acoustic type of things because I was so involved in music. So I was trying to express those same type of sentiments in lyrics, in lyrical content. So I did have a deep passion for writing in that format, that it would transcend into something that was published books, what was a surprise to me, but a very pleasant one because as anyone who writes, whether it's a blog piece or poetry or anything else, can be quite cathartic, quite challenging to yourself, you really have to find your own core. When you know something's going out publicly, you have to find enough of your friends or family will read it. So you need to find the truthful you in that to speak that, oh, I'm like this or I think that, and then people close to you kind of help monitor your authenticity by reading your books, like my own family reading my own books and have saying, wow, okay, that is who you are. We found out new things about you, even though we love you and have known you for years, but, it keeps you authentic to know that people will read and look into your life through written word that's published outside of just your ministry letters.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about that in a minute, but we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue to our conversation with author Tim Huff, and we're going to talk about the Yuletide factor. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Of every weed, but severed from the roots of ritual, we surf the surface of a widescreen world and find no virtue in the virtual. We shrivel on the edges of a wood whose heart we once inhabited in love. Now we have need of you, forgotten root, the stock and stem of every living thing, whom once we worshipped in the sacred grove. For now is winter, now is withering, unless we let you root us deep within, under the ground of being, graft us in.
Oh, come now, day spring, come and
you. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to O Come, O Come, Emmanuel from Steve Bell's Keening for the Dawn CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Tim Huff. Tim, you talked to just before we went to break about the whole aspect of people reading your books and seeing you in your books and how that challenges and makes you want to be more authentic. I found that as I was reading Yuletide Factor that it seemed to be a little bit more personal. You got into a little bit more detail about some of your own background and some of your own experiences and that. Was that a deliberate decision on your part, or did that just come about as you were going through the writing process?
Perhaps a tad of both. I mean, you become more comfortable. third book in, you become a little more comfortable that it's okay to expose more of yourself. And so there's that. I'd be a few years older, and so you feel a little more comfortable as you get older. I'm 51 now, and so when I started writing, I was in my early 40s. And so now just even more comfortable just saying, you know, there's nothing to lose here but to gain. But to share deeply, and so there were those parts of it, and then it's about Christmas, and if ever there's a time where we open up our hearts in a different way or we reflect on our childhoods, Christmas seems to do it. So I think it was the content, the substance that I was headed into as well.
When you look at that, I mean, I think of the time you talk about being a Santa Claus and you get stuck in a slide. And you talk about some of your own reactions in that. Is there a fear when you're writing something like this that it's going to shock people or have them sort of taken aback and going, I never knew that about Tim? Is that something that you think about when you're doing this?
A little bit. I mean, that sure happens when you go back. The first time, for me anyway, I write pretty freely. Then you go back through and you edit yourself and you think through yourself and you think, okay, do I really want to say that, or is that how I want to say that, or have I said too much or too little? Have I tried to say things too many ways? I mean, so content-wise you edit, but also even emotionally you edit. I know there's a section in the center which is called Believing No Less, the Lord's Prayer at Christmas. And I really go through the Lord's Prayer line by line, A, to talk about what I actually think that means and kind of quiz, can I actually authentically pray that? And secondly, how that lines up with the Christmas story. And I think there, even my own family members have come to me, like my folks and stuff, who found that really insightful about their own son. You know, the challenges I have with different parts of the Lord's Prayer, the parts that roll off my tongue fervently, the parts where I go, really? You know, my questioning about temptation and free will and how that part in the Lord's Prayer, how do I pray that? Do I stumble over that differently than other parts of the Lord's Prayer? So, yeah, you absolutely start to expose yourself in a different way. But I found that a little bit liberating as well, I must admit.
Well, looking at that and looking at the different things you talked about, you take a look at some of the Christmas traditions and you give the readers a new take, things like the Christmas tree and the history behind it with Prince Albert and Queen Victoria. Mistletoe, I like, you know, the fact that it's a poisonous plant and some of the other things around it Advent and things like that. Was there any one of these things as you were going through the writing process and the research and that surprised you the most?
I'm not sure if it's a surprise in that. I mean, there was a lot of it. Like, yeah, things like the mistletoe and how did we go from that plant that's a parasite to thinking that's something we would be, that, you know, people would be in love beneath. Like, so there were those things. History of Santa Claus is super interesting, how it morphed from a 4th century saint to, you know, the guy on our Coke bottles. So there were all those types of things. But it's more an exploratory over how we now have taken all those traditions, all those beautiful things from the past, and we get to this place where people are talking about a war on Christmas and, you know, is it a holiday or is it Christmas? And can we come back to the center and say, you know, regardless of what the entire world is saying or the banners that are up about that, do we actually need a war on Christmas or do we just need to inherently live out Christmas the way we know it so we don't use words like war and battle and things like that about the topic. We just intimately share our Christmas perspective. So I think one of the places that comes out best, to tell you the truth, is this book, unlike my other books, and a little bit unlike most books of its kind, I think, from what I've seen, I invited Annie Brandner to write a reflection and discussion guide, and her piece is beautiful. Her piece is at the end. We've taken a chapter, and I wanted it turned around that now the readers would receive it, that this is about them, not about me, not about the people I've encountered. This is actually about them.
Yeah, and I like the way that you've brought different voices in that. Not only did you bring in Annie Bradner, you brought in Steve Bell and Greg Paul, two guys that you've worked together very closely with. You and Greg actually go on writing retreats together to do interludes where, again, you break up sort of the narrative of the book with these little breaks to kind of give people some breathing room. And then you've got Moira Brown and Lorna Duick doing your benediction and your prologue. Is that something that you really thought about in terms of formatting the book that way?
Yeah, I did. I would say sometimes you just fall into ideas as you move along. But I was very much about this topic. I was like, I think more than my voice would really work well here because of the topic. That I would get Steve to write about comfort because Steve is known as a comforter through his music. So it wasn't just about having someone write about comfort. It was actually about going after Steve and saying, Steve, I think it needs to be you. That Greg would write about joy. It was very much going to Greg Paul and saying, you're the guy, Greg, because he works so closely with such hardcore, rough situations on the street. And the topic of joy is one that really needs to be wrestled with in that type of work, and that he would come out with something as lovely as he did, but that has a lot of rawness to it and really kind of approaches. A lot of people don't feel joy at Christmas. How are we going to go about that? So Moira's been so excellent to me, so it was a natural to ask her to introduce the book. And Lorna just does such great broadcast journalism, so for her to tie it up, just have her distinguished name and approach to things. So even though I wanted those pieces, for sure I was going down that path, I lucked out that the four people I wanted were the four people that said yes.
Yeah. You talk about that, you know, Steve doing comfort, Greg Paul doing joy. You subtitle the book, The Cause for Perpetual Comfort and Joy. And it almost sounds like the whole phrase, you know, it's almost become kitschy, is that, you know, Christmas all year round. But is that what you were trying to get across in the book, is that we really need to celebrate what Christmas means and entails and its spirit continually, not just once a year?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. The last line in the book is the first line that I wrote, which is, we Christmas best when we Christmas always. So the idea, I mean, the epilogue is called Christmas the Verb, meaning when we take Christmas the noun, we say, okay, now how do we Christmas? What does that mean to actually Christmas as a verb? And so that last line is what I really wrote around. Like I said, it reads in the book as the last line written by me, but it was the first thing I wrote on a piece of paper, and it was just my handwriting when I wrote it. We Christmas best when we Christmas always. When the good people we work to become from December 1st to Boxing Day, where we care differently about our relationships and we are more soulful about seeking out God, we're more tender-hearted, we're more charitable to the people we love, but also we look at the poor and the poor in spirit differently, that those people we become in this time, those are really the people we're called to be in the February grayness of February, in the dog days of summer. And even in the back of the book, I kind of mention my heart's desire is not that people would just take in this book at Christmas, but that someone in a fall retreat or at a summer picnic event would pick up the book and read through and go, wow, this is, means just as much now as it does in December.
Well, I want to take a final break here, and then we'll come back and finish our conversation with Tim Huff. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
Stood watch just like any other night, counting sheep and trying upright, shuffling our feet, we heard the beat of an angel's wing, an angel's wing, and above we saw the strangest thing, the light all around began to sing.
Welcome to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Glory from the Steve Bell's Keening for the Dawn CD. I'm your host, Robert White. We're going to wrap up our conversation with Tim Huff. Tim, just have a couple of quick minutes here. What's been the reaction to the Yuletide Factor so far?
It's been really, really lovely. We've had a number of people make bulk orders of the book. I think the idea that adding this reflection, the reflection guide is great for the individual reader, but the discussion guide, because they're individual stories that are strung together with a theme, I found a lot of book clubs were taking in Bent Hope and Dancing with Dynamite, and a lot of small groups and youth groups, and even some high school teachers in Christian schools, but even in public schools were taking on certain chapters because there was, even though there was my faith perspective, there was a lot of social commentary involved and things like that. And so when we created the guide that is good for personal reflection but also is really workable for groups and small groups, all of a sudden we started to get people taking in orders of, you know, 30 or 50 or 75 books because they were handing them out to clubs and groups and things like that. The books become really already picked up by a lot of organizations as the ideal gift for a donor or a volunteer or a staff person. So the response there has been really positive. The more personal response has been already emails coming to me from various parts of Canada at present, just where some of the stories or some of the moments of reflection that they've paused on have caused them to revisit their Christmas traditions or to revisit things that they would have, like Mary, treasured in their hearts and pondered and kept in their hearts. So I'm very encouraged. The dedication of the book is to people who are broken and we can find comfort and joy together with them.
Where can people get more information about the book?
Well, there's really two places. It's in, you know, if you went to Indigo or Chapters and put in the Yuletide Factor, it'll show up. If it's not on the shelves, it's in their system. You can order it right through any mainstream bookstore, certainly any Christian bookstore. But the quickest link to get it from is Castle Key Books. Castle Key, of course, is Castle, but Key is Quaw books.com/the Yuletide Factor, Castle Key Books. /Yuletide Factor. Or if you want to know more about the wider things I'm doing with my books, or the same link is on there, my website is CompassionSeries.com. CompassionSeries.com. So lots of places to find it. It's on it. You can get it through Amazon as well. So thank you for asking.
Great. Tim, thanks very much for your time tonight.
It's great to be here. Thanks again, Robert.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today and thanking my guest, Tim Huff. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at artsconnection.ca. Be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@artsconnection.ca. Follow us on Twitter @SayLaw13. Look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook or check out the Arts Connection blog at blog.artsconnection.ca. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.